We are here in California for a special on-site podcast. We're at Mobility Field Day, and we're at the end of day one. Just doing a quick recap on what happened today.
Yeah, and so we is just me and me, Raymond, and Chris. And yeah, there's no alcohol involved because we had to be sober. We weren't allowed to play a drinking game with the 40-whatever...
Yes, there was a proposal that a drinking game should occur every time Fortinet says 40, but I believe we all would be at the
wasted.
Hospital.
Yeah.
At this point, so we did not do that. But today started off with Juniper with a couple of product announcements. Raymond, what did you think? Do you want to start off with ChatGPT?
Yeah. So. Of course, the AI buzzword is fell a lot, and so we didn't take the effort to do a buzzword bingo. But yeah, so it was good to see that people are using more advanced algorithms, and I'm not going to use the AI word, but so more advanced algorithms to interface with people in a natural language way. And Juniper announced that they're going to implement ChatGPT and it's the ChatGPT model into Marvis. So it won't get the knowledge of the entire internet, but it will get the knowledge of the Juniper documentation, which Sudhir promised they're going to vastly improve and update.
Even if they were using, Bob Friday is very careful about the language that he uses, so he actually didn't mention AI all that frequently. It was all about language models, and it was all about ChatGPT. And they've got a really good track record of delivering on what Bob has said they're going to be doing. So from Marvis with the sort of light natural language processing.
Which was really horrible.
Was horrible initially, but it is still a conversational interface, and that's what they promised. So it's there. Hopefully, this is really just an expansion of that, making it easier for you to ask questions and Marvis to interpret. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this down the road, and how robust it becomes. Is this going to be something where you can ask Marvis to, all right, I'd like you to deploy this change to these sites, and Marvis just does that, or hey, I'd like you to pull down this data, I'd like you to parse it in this way, find the output, and apply that to those APs that you pulled down. So it should be interesting to see what they do with it, but right now it's really just an integration into the platform with ChatGPT.
Yeah, sending out commands to Marvis, I think it's quite far away because all has to come down to legality, right? So if I ask Marvis to do something and it does it wrong, or who's responsible? Is it me? Is it the AI or is it Juniper? And so, but getting information and getting recommendations, yeah, that's what we see, and it's probably going to learn as well from feedback that we're giving it.
The training of that model was a big focus. That feedback, that reinforcement of the model, both personalized, kind of for your instance, and sort of across the whole model. When it comes to Mist as a whole, so it looks like there's a big focus on taking that in that data in, correcting it when it is wrong, and fixing it as it goes forward.
Yeah. Talking about correcting things when they're wrong, another thing they announced was a Zoom integration, where again they're using the AI. So in this case, the Marvis SDK that can analyze applications, and for example, Zoom, on your laptop, and then saying, "Well, if you have an issue with Zoom, is it your client? Is it the AP? Is it the switch? Is it the internet connection, or is it Zoom itself?" So pinpointing more and more where an application issue or a user experience issue might come from.
It's a very cool way of doing it, because Zoom provides some data about what the application was doing, what the application experience was, and a little bit of data about the client too. So getting that information over the network to really classify, is this a good experience for the application, instead of trying to infer it from other data, that was very cool. And it's already a client that is, an agent, if you will, that is already on the device. So if you've already got Mist and you've already got Zoom, these pieces are there. And you're just getting more better data.
Yeah, and so it was surprising, because whenever you use Zoom and there is an issue, it always says a message of internet connection unstable or connection unstable. It always blames the network, never blames itself. But by giving that information, you could even say, well, okay, it's not me, it's not the network, it's actually Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly. Hopefully they provide some additional feedback on it. But either way, I think it's a good addition to the Mist portfolio. And I think getting data from the client itself is always going to be the best way to do it. You can look at it from other means, but what the client is actually seeing is the best data. They also had a couple of other components, some expansion of like wired actions. So the ability to unstick ports that are stuck, whether it's the client on the other end, the example that they used is a security camera that gets stuck, just doesn't send any data, identifying that and dropping the port and bringing it back up to resolve that problem. I actually wasn't clear whether they were they could give the ability from Marvis or wired actions to do that automatically, or if it just became a recommendation that you had to approve.
No, so it's a recommendation, and so they, I think, repeated this, because the port stuck, as the Marvis action is called, was actually introduced at Networking Field Day in, I think, January or February.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been in there, but it's just showing that they're continuously improving Marvis. And what they're doing is they're looking at data coming from your switches, looking at behavior of devices that are connected to your switch, for example, IP cameras, security cameras, and they'll create a baseline of, okay, this type of device has this, is sending data, this amount of data on a daily average or on an hourly average. And now it's deviating from it. For example, it's no longer using any data or sending any data, but it is consuming PoE power. So maybe we want to reboot the system, so do a PoE off and PoE on, and then see if that fixes the problem. So it needs similar devices on the switch or on the network to determine a baseline and deviation from it.
Yeah. So another really just expansion of Marvis and their kind of automated actions and the data that they're collecting. They've really had this very nice slow progression with expansion of features, and really just taking a peek at the problems that real clients are having through some of the TAC case notes or customer feedback, and trying to see if they can resolve that automatically. So very cool to see.
Yep. And so another thing they announced is a new piece of hardware.
Yes, the AP24. So this is their low cost, their low tier 6 gigahertz AP. It is 2x2, if I remember correctly. And it is tri-band capable, but dual concurrent. So software-defined radios with separate antennas, but only two of them can be active at a time. So it was at 2.4 or 5, dual 5 or 5 and 6, I think, were the options.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I'm not sure. So the one of the radios was either going to be 2.4 or 6. So I think it's 2, 4, 5 and 5 or 6. I'm not sure if you can do dual 5.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, I think either way, if you're buying a 6 gigahertz AP, you're probably not running dual 5, and you probably want to take advantage of that 6 gigahertz radio anyway. So
yeah, and it's filling the gap of getting an entry-level 6 gigahertz AP, and so I think it's a good solution if you want to do 6 gigahertz, and if you're sure that you're you don't have any 2.4 clients, then why bother with a tri-radio AP?
Yeah, and it's also pretty compact. That I was quite surprised, and fair thin as well. The really nice looking access point that I think a lot of them they're getting very big and wieldy, and this is a nice change from that.
Yeah, it fits nicely on the same base plate as every other one, but it didn't feel cheap.
No,
it was still some weight to it, and so it still felt.
It actually feels nicer than their mid-range one. That I don't know if it's just because it's all in a compact case and there's more like support that's closer together, but it felt more robust. It felt like there was less give to the exterior components. Very cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on one of those. So they gave us as delegates an AP 34, which is also a 6 gigahertz AP. I was hoping after we saw the presentation they would have given us a AP 24, but hey, you can't look a gift horse in the mouth, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the 34 is the mid-range. It's the slightly higher end, but I really like the form factor, the AP 24. I think they've done a good job with it. And then the other announcement today is Mist Access Assurance, which is, I believe, the third vendor with a product with assurance in its name. It is a kind of a simple NAC solution within the Mist Cloud. From a SSID or a port configuration, it's kind of a two-click to get it enabled, and then a very simple rules engine. It is simple to look at.
It's not but overcomplicated.
It is not. But you can do a lot with it. When looking at their demo, I understood what each and every rule was doing, and I had never seen this interface before. It shows it's the if the client is this, I want you to do this in just a single line, and that is missing from a lot of NAC solutions There's a lot of them that are very complicated to set up, and taking a look at it, they're tough to understand, but they did a very nice job with the interface.
Yeah, the flow was very logical in order to get that done. And it'll work on wired and wireless.
So wired and wireless with Mist directly or third party with Mist Edge. So yes. It runs on Mist Edge. For third-party devices, so
it might become a competitor to ICE or ClearPass. Who knows?
I mean, certainly have to get our hands on it and play with it a bit in order to kind of make that determination. We only saw the demo today and saw the interface. So, but I think there's a lot of customers that deploy ICE and ClearPass that do not need. Full-fledged ICE
that
or ClearPass,
yes.
Even like if you're running Windows NPS, it's not hard, but it's not as straightforward as what we were seeing today. So I'm hoping this is a nice little mini NAC that you can roll out to customers that have some basic authentication needs, even with more complicated rules. I was excited to see it.
Yep. And then, yeah, that was the morning part of this day. And so then after lunch, we went on to Fortinet.
Yes, so they had a quick overview of all the Forta products, they started with a full demo, so running through basically every page of their Forta AI Ops product. This is a separate, currently it can be deployed as a VM, and they have hardware coming in kind of a small, medium, or large, and in the future you'll be able to deploy it in the cloud. It looked like a relatively simple network monitoring solution for their products, and then some AI recommendations and highlighting of problems. I would not consider it a must-buy product if you're in the Fortinet family.
Yeah, I wasn't that impressed. But again, also, their AI is growing, right? So, or their set of algorithms. Let's try and move away from AI, but their set of algorithms is growing. They're doing a on-prem version of this AI at the moment. So, how do you run an AI on-prem? That must have some at least limitations, or there's a lot of things that come in and play with AI as memory and CPU and storage for all the data that you're taking in. I wonder, and I'm curious to see how it will evolve.
What their roadmap looks like for it, what their plans are for some of the other AI insights and recommendations. From the demo, they were relatively simple and very much broad recommendations. So when there was some of the coverage hole detection, it made recommendations to alter six different configuration items. Yes. that may impact that, not in a you should lower this by 3 dB or raise this by 3 dB or change this from high to low. It was a kind of look at these configuration items. They may impact what we're seeing.
Yeah. And the insight where they're also playing on their AI is, to me, would look like, well, that's something I would expect from a basic management system and not from an AI ops.
It's tough. I really feel like we're kind of beating up on this, but Fortinet has set a high bar with a lot of their other products.
Agreed.
They've got a fantastic firewall product that does.
Agreed.
That becomes the controller for the APs and the switching, and you can manage a ton of them with FortiManager. I like a lot of what they're doing. I think this product, in its current form, just doesn't meet the bar that they set with their other ones.
Yep, agreed. Like, if you would ask me what kind of firewall solution, Fortinet, it would be FortiGate, or Fortinet would be the first one that comes to mind for me.
They've got just an absolutely phenomenal price to performance. I think there are other products that can do other things than this, but for a general firewall, for what you're looking for, if you're looking for something that's robust, does things very well, is easy to use, and has a good price point, I really like the Fortinet product. So I don't want people to think we're just going to beat up on Fortinet time. They do some good stuff. On their more, I guess, security focus side, they also, was this an announcement or was this something that they already had, the FortiSASS?
SASE? SASE, I think they call it. I think they mentioned it on the previous mobility field day, or a previous mobility or tech field day, and they're still evolving this as well. So we saw screens from a beta version,
mm-hmm.
And so it's their end zero trust solution, access from anywhere.
Yeah, and this is one I it's tough because I don't know the competitive landscape around this. Is this something that's sort of blowing others away, or is this a mid-tier product, or is this very simple? I just don't know that. It's not an area that I play in.
Nope, me neither.
But it seemed to be mostly, hey, we're going to take this data, whether it's at an agent on the client, whether it's at an AP that is managed by this SASE product, and we're going to tunnel back these applications. Licensing was per tier with bandwidth, and there was some confusion on the bandwidth one initially when they talked about licensing for bandwidth. And I think myself, Sam Clements, I don't know if you had the same thing. I'm like, are you buying blocks of data? But you're not. You're basically purchasing the internet connection to this SASE service, whether it's per user or in a block. So you might grab 5 megabit per second per user, or you can buy 100 megabit per second or 200 megabit per second. I'm using these as examples. I don't know what their actual like licensing sheet looks like, but you're buying either a block of that bandwidth or you're buying it per user. So this is one, it seems a little weird that the APs are managed by the SASE product and not just managed traditionally.
But that made it confusing because it could either be managed from the FortiGate or the FortiGate in the cloud or from the SASE. So there's three options where you can configure and manage an AP.
Yes.
But they do not mix.
That is a little weird. I'm curious to chat with them a little bit. I think we're going to be getting together with them tonight at the mixer.
We are.
And see that is how linked are these products, because based on the demo it didn't look like they were, that you're taking a standard AP that they have, it's the same model, it's the same hardware, and you're deploying it and using the SASE like a controller to configure that AP versus having it within the FortiGate controller or within the FortiCloud. So I'm hoping there's a little bit better integration than what we were seeing. But like I said, I really don't know too much about this landscape and whether is that new to it, or is this something that only Fortinet's doing?
Well, I think SASE is something fairly new, mm-hmm. at least the actual implementation that we see now.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, same as you, I don't have any experience on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so another thing they're looking at, the last part of their presentation was a view forward, looking into the future, and where they depicted a situation where if you have a single pane of glass, or vendor lock-in, as I sometimes call it as well, mm-hmm. Their view of having everything in a NOC, and they could supply a NOC with every single piece of information built from their product, built from their different modules.
The problem I was seeing with that was they weren't really different modules, that they were different products. So it's not like they took FortiCloud and added, here's an application within FortiCloud and you can license the individual application in FortiCloud. It's here's FortiCloud, which could be managing your APs, your FortiLAN manager, or inventory manager, which is managing your FortiGates, which is managing your APs. You've got all those options as far as the network side, but then the other components are really, really separated. They were showing off the FortiAIOps, but that's a separate dashboard that you're looking at in a separate product.
In the cloud.
FortiSASE is a separate, AIOps on-prem, yeah.
On-prem, SASE in the cloud.
SASE is in the cloud. There's FortiAnalyzer, which would be separate. There's FortiMonitor, which is kind of separate. It was a story of single pane of glass and an experience that didn't seem very single pane of glass, besides the fact that it's pulling from a lot of the same sources. It's all looking mostly, they're looking at the firewalls, they're looking at the switches, they're looking at the APs to get that data, and then presenting it and having a different focus across different products.
Yeah, no, I agree. So maybe, and so maybe that's oriented because they are a security company and they want to do most of the stuff locally, and maybe it's even security in that segmentation as well. But if you want to use this in a NOC, it'd probably be better if it was a little bit smoother experience.
Yeah, and I very much like their pick your poison kind of, or pick your deployment methodology. That if you want it on prem, you can have it on prem. If you want it, if you want it on hardware, you can have it on hardware. If you want it in the cloud, you can have it in the cloud. That I like having those options. It's just that sort of integration and single pane of glass story is just not there for me anymore. Where I think historically it had been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was it for today, right?
No, we did a roundtable discussion.
We did do a roundtable discussion.
Which was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was... I really highly recommend you check it out. I mean, Sam, I think, brought up some good points. Really, the concept around it was some of the cloud services, and the example we were using for this was Radius. Does Radius actually belong in the cloud? And what are the kind of the pros and cons of that? And Sam's position was particularly with VoIP clients that it's not a place that it should be in the cloud. You want it as close to the client as you can to minimize some of that roaming time and latency for authentication. What were your thoughts on the discussion?
Yeah, so he said, so he was like, they're saying everything needs to be in the cloud. That's what the sales of the vendors that are offering this are saying. Well, everything should be in the cloud, and in a typical Sam Clemens way, it ended up to being, well, it depends. Depends on your deployment. Are you doing VoIP? Aren't you doing VoIP? Do you have a good internet connection, or don't you have a good internet connection? And so he was, for example, saying, well, if I have a latency sensitive application like VoIP and my connection is has a lot of latency, then a cloud-based NAC solution might not be a good solution. And it came down to, well, don't trust the account managers, don't trust the salespeople. Look at the experts, look at the advisors, consultants, and see, is it a good situation or a good solution for you?
Yeah, I mean, like anything, you really have to run through what does the business need, and then make the product decisions and architecture decisions based on that. I think Sam's highlight, like particularly when you're talking about the dedicated VoIP devices, so the phones like that are used in hospitals, I mean, you can overcome... you can overcome the Radius concerns by not using Radius for those clients. I mean,
a lot of companies already do.
Yeah,
create a dedicated VoIP SSID, put PSK on there, and Bob is your uncle.
Yep, and I mean, you don't even need to. With a lot of vendor solutions now, you don't even need to do a dedicated SSID for it. There's a PPSK SSID, and then you can still do. You can still have your VoIP PSK that's assigning the right role and the right VLAN, which is getting the right QoS and segmenting that from the other clients. Now, is it as secure as doing full cert-based .1x? Absolutely not.
Nope.
Does
it need to be?
Right. There's that balancing act. Security is always that balance of access of either shutting everything down completely and making it incredibly difficult, or wide open, very easy. And the truth is, the right solution is always somewhere in the middle. And I think if it's only a VoIP client, I do not think that there are significant security concerns with a PSK on those devices.
Yep, agreed.
So
tonight we're going to dinner with the delegates, and some of the vendors are coming as well, so we'll try and get some vendor people drunk and see if they can give us some saucy secrets that we can tell you tomorrow.
Well, yeah, we'll try not to share too many saucy secrets, but we'll sign off for today. Pick this up, do another recap tomorrow, but we'll should be it.
Yeah, hope you liked it. See you later.
Thanks.